From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs at the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Today, we welcome to Naps Chat Jim Sauber, the Chief of Staff of NALC to NALC President Fred Rolando. Jim joined the National Association of Letter Carriers in 1985 as an economist. That's almost a lifetime ago, Jim. And he was promoted to Director of Research for the better part of his career at the NALC, and now he is the Chief of Staff to the President. Full disclosure, Jim and I worked on the same floor at the NALC when I worked for the NALC for a six-plus year period back in the 1990s, so it's back at home. I'm back at home. In any case, today, Jim and I are going to talk about probably one of the most important attributes of the United States Postal Service, which is its universal service obligation. The President's task force on the Postal Service, as well as other private sector competitors of the Postal Service and a number of academics, have taken turns swiping at the universal service obligation and are attempting to undermine its scope and the foundation upon which it is built. Now, there is no specific definition in law of what the universal service obligation is. Moreover, the PRC has sort of defined it operationally, meaning there's no statutory foundation for it other than the six-day mail delivery. But as far as accessibility and product line, it really isn't defined in statute. However, we can outline a number of attributes to the universal service obligation, which include geographic reach, that it reaches everyone in the United States, that there is a select menu of services for which the universal service obligation applies, that there needs to be widespread access to these services, that there needs to be a frequency, a certain degree of frequency to access to these services, its price and affordability needs to meet the needs of the American public. There has to be a consistent quality, and there must be an opportunity for the postal customers to appeal any violations to the universal service obligations. That is, if the Postal Service fails to meet whatever that USO, universal service obligation, is. Now, Jim, we've been doing this for a long time. Talk to me what the universal service obligation means to you and to the National Association of Letter Carriers and to the Postal Service.
Well, I think it's really an important question because a lot of economists think of the universal service obligation as an economic concept. But I think it's more important for us to think of the USO as a political concept. And this is really something that Congress has to decide. And you're right, there's no single definition written into the statute, but there are sort of some common practices and, that we've established over time, so that I think we have a good idea of what the USO is, even if it's not written down. And so when we think about it, the most important thing is that we serve every citizen in this country and every business out there, that nobody's excluded, whether you live in the most remote areas or if you live in urban core areas where in economic struggling areas, no matter what the economic conditions, that you have access to a certain number of services. And that includes access to a post office, access to collection boxes, delivery services 6 days a week. So I think we have those services include the whole range of postal products, everything from packages to newspapers, magazines, letters, invoices, the whole range of postal products. So I think even if it's not written down, we have a pretty good idea of what the universal service obligation involves.
One of the areas where the President's task force really has taken aim is in this, not the necessarily universal aspect of it or the obligation aspect of it, but it's the services aspect of it. That is, what services are subject to the USO. For example, they have specifically recommended that only so-called essential postal products be subjected to the USO. Now, how, by narrowing that definition or restricting the definition of the USO to those types of products, how would that affect the USO as we understand it?
Well, this is a really dangerous idea of redefining the USO into essential versus commercial services. I mean, the first thing I would note is that it's a pretty unworkable definition, because what's essential to one mailer may not be essential to another mailer. In the task force report, they really only gave two examples. I think they mentioned prescription drugs and government mail, things from, say, the Social Security Administration or some official communication from the government. But I can guarantee you, if you talk to our customers, all their mail is essential. It's essential to their businesses. And so this notion that somehow you can make this distinction, I just don't think is very workable, because now you're regulating the intent of the mailers, and how do you determine the intent of mailers? I don't think it's really a practical way to go, and I don't think it's going to have much success in the legislative process.
In terms of, this touches upon universal and the service aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Assuming I am a home business, small home business located in Angle Inlet, Minnesota, which is sort of on the other side of the Canadian border, but part of the United States, how do you provide a universal service to that area if I don't have a broad definition of what a USO is?
That's correct. One of my reactions to the White House Task Force report was they were making the argument that somehow the USO is less important now that people are using less letter mail than it used to be. But I would make the argument that it's actually more essential now, because the Postal Service is really the truly universal communication network we have. The telephones and cell phones don't go to every community in the country. Not everybody has access to the internet. So it's more essential, not less. And secondly, the USO is also essential for so-called competitive products. And again, it may be becoming more important, not less important, as there's been this revolution in the retail services industries, a huge downsizing of brick-and-mortar stores, the growing importance of e-commerce. That means having a universal delivery network is more important than ever. And if particularly in areas of the country, rural areas and inner-city areas or core urban areas with economic development problems, those are the places where retail options have dried up entirely. And folks are even more dependent now on having a delivery service where they can buy goods and services through the mail and online.
Now, what would happen to these businesses, or these small businesses, or even large businesses, mm-hmm. that all of a sudden would not be able to have this access to postal-reliant communities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about the Postal Service as a sort of a key part of our economic infrastructure is that it creates national markets. And a lot of people think that that's somehow a subsidy to rural America or a subsidy to urban America where there's less economic activity. But in fact, it's a benefit to all America. That means that every business in the country can reach customers in every part of the country. And that's the beauty of a network like this. It's not like a gift to rural America that we have postal services. It's actually a benefit to New York City and Chicago and San Francisco that people can reach their home communities and do business with every part of the country.
One of the most important attributes of the United States Postal Service is its network, whether it be the delivery network or the access point or basically the acceptance network of the institution. If I narrow the universal service obligation, what does it do to the value of the United States Postal Service as a corporate entity?
It would really undermine the value of these networks. These are really things that have been built up over a couple of centuries, and frankly, they just wouldn't exist if we had depended on the private sector to do it. It was the classic example of a public good. The fact that the government built this over time has positive externalities, what an economist would call it. It has positive benefits for everybody. And if you start narrowing the USO, then those networks start to break down, because the cost of operating the networks, the less the fewer the number of items and kinds of products you use in that network. If you reduce those numbers, then the cost of the network rises, and then you get into this really bad cycle of falling volumes and rising costs.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's sort of counterintuitive to what the administration is proposing, mm-hmm. that as you narrow the obligation, as you narrow the products that are subject to the USO, what happens is the price goes up because the value of the network goes down, and you have the skimming off of those product lines to competitors where they think there's a profit to be made, and the Postal Service will just be left with those products for which there is really a one provider, maybe just the federal government and pharmaceutical companies, using the definition the administration seemed to use. That's
right. I mean, this is an example where all mailers have an interest in other types of mail being delivered in this network, because we deliver letters and invoices and advertisements, the cost of delivering packages is kept much lower. And because we're delivering so many packages now, we're keeping the cost of letter mail affordable as well. So as an example, and this is where I think the White House Task Force really got it wrong, they made the argument that somehow competitive services could be packages could be weaned off of the USO. Well, competitive packages produce $7 billion in profits for the Postal Service. That helps. We don't really call them profits. They call it contribution to overhead costs. But it's essentially $7 billion in revenues above and beyond costs associated with the delivery of packages. And that means that's a benefit to all other types of mailers, whether you're newspapers or magazines or direct mailers. The fact that the costs of this beautiful network is being shared by lots of different types of mailers keeps the cost down for everybody.
Now, Robert Taub, who's the chairman of the Postal Regulatory Commission, mm-hmm. Has sort of been banging the drum for Congress to actually define what it means by universal service obligation. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, I think it is a good idea as long as it is Congress that defines it. What I think this, as I mentioned at the beginning, this is a political decision. What kinds of services that we think the Postal Service should provide? And this could be a much broader discussion than what we're doing now. I mean, there are some folks who think, you know, there are lots of people in America that don't have access to banks, particularly in rural areas where there are no banks. Well, could the universal service obligation include additional financial services in areas where there are no banks? So I do think it's inherently a political decision, and we could support, depending on what Congress decided, if they made the right decision, they had a broad-based definition of USO, we could support that. What I know NALC cannot support, and I doubt a lot of the mailing industry would support, is just turning that task over to the regulators, in which it turns into a technocratic or an economic discussion, which I just don't think is helpful. I think Congress, as in a democratic society, should decide what the scope of the Postal Service should be.
Particularly since in our Constitution it provides or it authorizes Congress to establish post office and post roads. It does not delegate that responsibility to anyone else or even to the president.
That's correct. That's correct. The Postal Service is one of the few agencies in the U.S. government that's got a specific grounding in the Constitution. So I think you're absolutely right about that.
Now, let's talk a little bit about a provision that was in, I believe, the Senate bill from last year, the legislation that was introduced by Tom Carper, Heidi Heitkamp, former Senator Heidi Heitkamp, mm-hmm. Claire McCaskill, and others, and Senator Jerry Moran of Kansas. And it paid specific attention to delivery standards and mail standards as it affects rural mail delivery and processing of mail destined or originating mm-hmm. To rural America. If you narrowed the scope of a universal service obligation, or you narrowed the definition of what a universal is, mm-hmm. that sort of counter what was the intent of the legislation. And in fact, Congressman Mark Meadows, the former chairman of the subcommittee with jurisdiction over the Postal Service, who's now in the minority, also accepted the premise that really you need to improve the universality of the Postal Service rather than diminish it.
That's correct. I mean, this is the network is are the crown jewels of the Postal Service. Anything that degrades a network is something that we should be concerned about. improving. I think that a lot of those provisions were in reaction to some decisions the Postal Service made on their mail processing networks. They, a lot of it, you know, I don't necessarily criticize the Postal Service for it. They were, you know, between the Great Recession and this new pre-funding mandate that was put on the Postal Service, and in combination with a very tight price cap, the CPI cap, that created conditions in which the Postal Service has been really making short-term tactical decisions to try to survive instead of investing in the network, its network over the long haul, and devising a long-term strategy to work in the digital age. And in the course of those, some of those tactical decisions proved to be really self-defeating. And a good example of that is they really, you know, downsized their processing network to such a degree that the quality of service in rural America in particular took a big hit. And what's sad about that is that, you know, the Office of Inspector General has kind of done a review of those decisions, and it showed that they generated a fraction of the savings that they claimed that these decisions would make. So what we ended up with was, you know, a smaller mail processing network and poorer service and not a lot of savings. And so that was disappointing. And I think that's what led the senators, particularly on the Senate side, to pursue new provisions to try to bolster the quality of service in rural America.
And interestingly enough, just last week, the Postal Regulatory Commission released its annual compliance determination, mm-hmm. which found that across most product categories, there has been a deterioration of service.
Yes, and that's, you know, this is a kind of dangerous thing for us. You know, the Postal Service has tremendous bipartisan support in the country. It's the highest rated agency in the government. We got an 88% approval rating according to the Pew Trust. We mess with that trust to our peril. We got to make sure we keep this consistently high level of service so that we keep the support of the American people.
What's also interesting is that despite the fact we have yet to see a postal reform bill introduced in this Congress, mm-hmm. there are a series of House resolutions that have been introduced that touch upon the USO directly, mm-hmm. particularly legislation that affects door delivery, mm-hmm. And also legislation that affects six-day delivery, mm-hmm. and also legislation that opposes any attempt to privatize the Postal Service.
Right. Those are very important resolutions. They're sort of policy markers that the entire Congress is sending to the committees of jurisdiction, that when they're putting together postal reform legislation, having these non-binding resolutions on these specific issues is a good way to signal to the committee where to go and where not to go. And so in this case, there's very strong support to keep six-day delivery. There's very strong support to keep door-to-door delivery. And there's a lot of opposition to privatization. So those are really valuable resolutions in terms of the policymaking process.
Do you think that a diminution of the USO, or narrowing as mm-hmm. contemplated by the president's task force, is a glide path to postal privatization?
I think so. I think they're quite open about it. When the Office of Management and Budget came out with their government restructuring plan last summer, they were quite clear. That was their idea. Their idea was to implement changes in the Postal Service as a way to prepare it for privatization, and that, you know, they basically said, you know, the White House task force would fill in the details. So as we saw from that report that came out in December, they proposed ending six-day delivery or letting the Postal Service end six-day delivery. They proposed to let the Postal Service reduce the number of households getting door delivery. And I think this is a way to cut costs and make it more profitable, maybe easier to sell and down the road.
Thanks, Jim. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I want to wish everyone out there a happy Easter, a happy Passover, and to thank Jim Sauber for joining us today from the National Association of Letter Carriers. Until next week.
I'm going to bend right down and write myself a letter and make